be the chick who rocks a body con. Be the bun spy who holds the gun. Wanna be a diamond girl, you're number one. The one you hang with the most fun. I wanna be like a modern day Debbie fucking Harry. I wanna be someone's love. I wanna be someone's other half. I wanna be the slut, the hoe, the tart. I wanna be the one you say to, don't start. I wanna have grace and I wanna have flair. I wanna be that girl who's never scared. I wanna have skinny hips and perfect hair. Wanna be the chick who doesn't care. I don't give a damn, it's fine. I'm not checking what time they were online. Back off, he's mine. I do this all the time. Seriously though, why hasn't he called when he was on his phone at 4:30? I'm out of ideas, let's do something outrageous. You'll be calling me a douche and a racist. When I feel down, this is how it goes. Get a call, do a line, life goes slow. Big smile so your face looks fab. Do you ever check how many likes your life has? I don't give a damn, it's fine. I'm not checking what time they were online. This all the time. I said, I don't give a damn, it's fine. I'm not checking what time they were online. Back off, he's mine. I do this all the time. Please baby, call me crazy, or fun, or spacey, or amazing. Bake brownies that'll make you hazy. Any substance to make you want me. Invite you back to my Instagram life. Want the real one? Take a hike. It's caged up right inside my mind, and it's not coming out for a while. I don't give a damn, it's fine. I'm not checking what time they were online. Back off, he's mine. I do this all the time. I write songs that'll stick in your head to get Spotify plays even after I'm dead. Buns of steel and a heart made of lead. One day I'll be talking on TED about how my youth is dead and I hated myself, I should have loved me instead. I don't give a damn, it's fine. I'm not checking what time they're online. Back off, he's mine. I do this all the time. I don't give a damn, it's fine. I'm not checking what time they're online. Back off, he's mine. I do this all the time. I don't give a damn, it's fine. I spend my life online clicking through the photos. All I wanna know though, can I have friends like Dorothy and Toto? I don't give a damn, it's fine. I live my life a lie, all about the makeup, the eyes. Sorry, I apologize all the time. I don't give a damn, it's fine. I'm not checking what time they were online. Back off, he's mine. I do this all the time. I don't give a damn, it's fine. I'm not checking what time they were online. Back off, he's mine. I do this all the time. I do this all the time. I do this all the time. I do this all the time.
Let the water hold me down. Letting the days go by. ID some of these songs. I hope you guys enjoyed this last couple things of music. We had four songs going on. First was Black Sheep by Metric. This wasn't tied to an album, but this was the song that was used for Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Such a good song. It is, as I actually demonstrated with DJ Tuesday over here, it is the one song that I can be like with people who they're like, I'd be like, have you heard of Metric? And they're like, no. And then I'd say, have you seen Scott Pilgrim versus the World? And they're like, yes. And I'm like, do you remember that one song they did? And they'd be like, yes. And I'm like, there it is. Yeah. The problem is, though, is I think the movie is becoming more and more outdated over time.
A little bit.
So it's my one connection is starting to fade away. Metric needs to start getting in with something else. Some new hip graphic novel property that I can throw out.
Alternatively, the X Factor was Edgar Wright all along. And it just needs to be, like, in every Cornetto movie from now on. Like,
oh my gosh, that's so funny. Yeah, when Edgar Wright... last thing he did was Baby Driver, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that was such a good movie. Oh, I love that one. That was a good one. Do you ever pay attention to music in movies? Like, do you ever, like, go, like, watch a movie and then, like, actually actively seek out what was featured in there?
So, I'm not super passionate about scores usually, but I have been talking recently to a friend who goes to Emerson who's super into sound design, and okay. The soundtrack they got me to pay attention to was Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, and, yeah.
There was some really interesting stuff in there. Notably, I saw a really cool Twitter thread about the Prowler's theme.
Oh.
Where, like, if you don't know the Prowler, he's my favorite character in that movie because he has, like, rocket boots and giant metal claws. So between the two of those things, it's sort of like he just throws his limbs around and, like, is carried by them.
Yeah.
And so his score is just just weird industrial ambient music followed by intermittent blah, blah.
Oh, I've never and so, noticed that. Wow.
Yeah, so it was actually like live recordings of elephants run through a distorter.
What?
There are other little ticks in that movie where, like, for glitch effects, they basically ran a toothbrush over a vacuum motor.
What? Really?
Yeah, lots of just really neat acoustic tricks.
Yeah.
So that's my one, like, party trick of knowing about movie scores is Into the Spider-Verse.
See, now that's a really cool way to do it because it also kind of blends in some of the magic about sound design. And one of the things that's really good is, like, the way... like, they innovate with certain effects that produce something entirely different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, the sound of, like, the punch sound in, like, video games?
Right.
It's, like, a hammer hitting, like, a melon. it's kind of makes sense, though.
Yep.
Or, ice hitting a glass. Mm. Those are nails.
Huh.
Yeah. It's trying to simulate recorded voice. Or so not recorded voice, but recorded sounds to what you would hear normally.
Mm-hmm.
Which is extremely interesting.
Yeah, back in my high school band days, like literally every band in South Florida, we went on the obligatory Orlando trip. and so we did get a little like studio thing where we attended a workshop called The Art of Foley, except it was a bit of a misnomer because we didn't do any Foley work. It was all ADR where, like, we had to try and lip sync, which okay. is awful.
Oh, really? I've never heard of that before.
Yeah. But we did... we all collectively sort of were interested enough to look up Foley work afterwards and... lots of hidden stuff with other stuff is what we learned.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's actually really cool.
Yeah.
What exactly, wait, so to run back, what exactly does a Foley do?
A Foley artist would, basically just create sound effects.
Okay.
I know, okay, here's the first thing that comes to mind. You know the bongos and the Flintstones? The...
Yeah.
That's a man setting up two giant balloons and running a stick between them.
Really, Jay?
I don't know why they couldn't just use bongos, but that wasn't bongo enough.
I think it's the same principle as the nails in the glass. Yeah.
It's so weird that we have to, like... go completely outside an object to get the essence of the object.
Yeah, absolutely.
To the extent that people will recognize it.
Oh, it's absolutely interesting. It's one of my favorite things. I think I think probably the art of any sort of media, like with a movie or a book or any sort of narrative, has the same thing that you're trying to simulate in something like life or a concept or fear and put it to a narrative or put it to something that's a lot more tactile.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like, say, like invasion narratives, for instance, being like a really big reflection on personal, like, country security.
Right.
Have you ever heard of the Nostalgia Chick and or Lindsay Ellis?
Love her, yeah.
She actually just came out yesterday with, well, that I guess it's 2 days ago, but,
right.
So yeah, one with, comparing Independence Day, the 1995 movie, to right. Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds. And talking about invasion narrative and how that reflects, like, can reflect, like, national psyche. All that stuff's really interesting. Those kind of media essays, especially when it's really well done.
Yeah. No, Lindsay Ellis is a champ. Who else? Folding Ideas is a good one for me. I mean, I know a lot of games video essayists, but that's a little bit of a departure.
Oh, do you know, like, Ahoy?
Yeah, yeah.
Ahoy's really good. That was one of my favorites. Oh, Big Joel. Big Joel is not video games.
Big Joel I haven't heard of.
That one's really good, especially if you like, he does like a really good series on God's Not Dead.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, that's showed up in my recommended feeds, actually. Yeah.
That one's really good. He also does one on, he analyzes, do you remember the big Red Pill movie? Like when anti-feminism was like a really big thing on YouTube?
Right.
He does like a really good analysis of it. It's like three parts. It actually takes apart some really interesting aspects of it. But that was really good.
Yeah, I found the name I was looking for earlier, because he looks similar to Folding Ideas guy. He's Innuendo Studios, and he actually lives in Somerville.
Does he?
He, among other things, has a really good ongoing series called The Alt-Right Playbook, which...
Oh, that's come up in my recommendation feeds, too.
Yeah, basically just sort of a rhetorical analysis of the alt-right does what it says on the tin. He also had a whole, like, half-hour thing on Smash Brothers' spectator sport, which was relevant to my interest for obvious reasons.
Yeah. Yes! Oh, my gosh. Yes, absolutely. That one... Do you remember, like, the Nostalgic Critic in its heyday?
Yeah, I... Here, things went weird.
So, yes, it did. Absolutely. Discussion. We are talking about media analysis. We're doing good. We're giving people an idea of what we're doing.
Right.
But, no, that was an interesting thing, actually. Did you check out the whole stuff on, like, the Change the Channel? I think it kind of became, like, a pretty... I don't think it being mob mentality, because I have utter trust in the... Not utter, but I think enough... I don't believe that the people who were levying accusations towards Channel Awesome lying would be in their best interest.
Right.
But that was weird. Did you ever watch it? Did you? Like, I used to watch The Nostalgia Critic.
Yeah, I think I missed its heyday. I think I caught it towards the end, like maybe a year before it shut down. I watched a fair bit of Nostalgia Critic, but Nostalgia Critic was mostly a gateway for me into Lindsay Ellis, and also Todd in the Shadows, who I love.
I really want to get into him. And also, side note, especially for those listening at home, whoever you are, Channel Awesome isn't shut down.
Huh.
It's still making videos, and it actually, like, pretty clipping rate. It took a couple hits for their dislike-like ratio.
Right.
But they kind of just kept going.
Hmm.
Did a sorry, not sorry, and then just, like, went on with their lives, and it worked. It was just really...
Yeah. I don't... So, truth be told, I think I watched, like, a recap video when I was half asleep once about, like, why the channel took that hit, but what I do remember was the disastrous behind the scenes thing of like the Channel Awesome movies.
Yes.
And so like how they like may have overheated in the desert at one point. Like my favorite moment from that whole expose was when someone went up to either Doug or Rob Walker, one of the two, and said like, hey, so we're gonna be here for like 8 hours, where's the crafts table? And they just sort of looked at them amusedly like, ha, crafts table. And then they realized they weren't joking, and they were like, oh, you wanted food, you were expecting food.
Yes.
Like,
which, side note, is actually part of like union agreements.
Yeah.
for movie is, I think too, that is absolutely true. And I also treated both their actors and their crew horribly.
Yeah.
But ironically, the Nostalgia Critic heavily criticized The Room for having bad movie etiquette with their crew and actors. Mm. So that adds another layer of irony on it. That one was interesting. Let's see. Also another one is like definitely sexual harassment claims were held against.
I see. Okay.
That was one of the ones, especially one of the HR people. And then because there was this one guy who like a bunch of girls felt extremely uncomfortable around him to the point of like, I'm a little fuzzy on all of the details, but I think that what happened was like this, like one person reported it to another person and they're like, oh, not this again. As if implying that this is not
the worst response you could have to that.
Yeah, absolutely not. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, we'll deal with this immediately. Oh, not again. Like, you never want this to like ever enter like the space. Also, a couple things on fair. This is kind of small potatoes, and it's kind of hard to really get too into this because I think that a lot of YouTube, I think probably if the DMCA really did a fine tooth comb through everything, they could find a lot that they could sue for. But like also how one of the ways that Channel Awesome did make its name, not through just through the Nostalgia Critic, but was like 2 second movies,
mm-hmm.
which just like cut movies together to is just a gag thing.
Yeah.
And that's not in fair use.
Hmm.
Because it actually, it's not really, it wasn't enough of a critique to really count it. It's right. Not like a Lindsay Ellis video that is like actually teaching you something about metatext and then, or analyzing a work and actually transforming it. It was just a 2 second cut of like a popular movie.
Right.
With its best scenes in it. So you don't even have to see it anymore. So that was weird. Absolutely. What was another one? I've never actually seen any Todd in the Shadows videos. Would you recommend?
I would recommend. I don't know if he's been active recently, so all of his critiques might be about songs that came out like 5 years ago. But
let me look him up. Yeah. I could have sworn he has new stuff.
I hope so. Yeah, it's funny. At live events, he wears like, you know, those morph suits that are just the face. It's like a special thing. He wears those to live events under his hoodie.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah, he's got stuff. There's something that came out like 12 hours ago.
Huh.
Pop song review, Hello by Adele and Hotline Bling by Drake.
Mm-hmm.
And then also top 10 best hit songs of 2018, part 1.
Okay, okay. Yeah, I know also there's a crossover gag where I'm pretty sure, like, in fiction, definitely not in real life, but in fiction, Lindsay Ellis does have, like, an obsessive crush on Todd in the Shadows.
Oh, that's so funny. Do you see that she is starting to get into videos with John Green?
I loved that crossover.
It was really good.
Yeah, like, which is a little weird, and then, like, Careless Whisper plays from the other room, and John Green just gives him a peace sign while reading Infinite Jest. Like,
oh my god. See, that's good. He also was in that one about YouTube creation.
Right.
Oh, I can't remember which one. What was the context of it? I think it was emotional labor, maybe?
Maybe, yeah. The two power couples right now are Lindsay Ellis and John Green and Hank Green and the McElroys.
Oh my gosh. I wouldn't be actually surprised if John Green and Lindsay Ellis, like, ended up... I mean, I don't know exactly what the relationship statuses are, but if it came out later, like, that they were dating, I would have been like, yeah.
Okay, John Green is a very faithful father of two, but...
Is he really? I don't know. See, yeah. That shows how much I know. I am not trying to slander the name of the Greens. Oh, I'm glad you can catch me on that. But, like, I had to assume that they were both, like, single people, mm-hmm. so... But I don't know. Maybe I could just... They have a similar rapport with each other.
Yeah.
Like a very natural chemistry. So, obviously, John Green, please don't be so unfaithful as a father of two.
Two, yeah.
Oh, that's so good. Young kids?
Youngish, yeah. Still single digits. Late single digits, I think.
Oh, that's pretty cute. I didn't know that. Is he... He's the younger brother, right?
I think he's the older one. He's the older one, yeah.
Okay. It's Hank's the other one.
It's John and... Yeah, it's John Green and Hank Green. I have been following their... So, the map for me was 6th grade, got into Crash Course. That was 2012. I remember this because it was the year of the YouTube Educational Grant Program.
Okay.
That led me to their personal channel, Vlogbrothers, which I think is amazing, and everyone mm-hmm. should watch it. Was a great online community to get me through the awkward days of middle school.
Mm-hmm.
And then around 2 years ago, I think, they started a podcast, which I enjoy. It's a good one-hour week, just banter podcast called Dear Hank and John.
Yeah.
And that's the state of the brand, pretty
okay.
much.
I gotcha. Have you read any of the books?
You know, I haven't. I've seen the movies, and my sister's a big fan of the books.
Okay. I know that... So wait, what do you say about movies again?
I've seen The Fault in Our Stars, and I've seen Paper Towns.
Okay. What do you think of the movies?
I was divorced enough from all the hype where I couldn't necessarily be disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really remember Fault in Our Stars. It's sort of, like, sloughed off my shoulders, so to speak. But okay. It was a fun night because we saw it, my sister and I, like, opening night. And we got, like, the theater set it up so that there were, like, little merch bags underneath all the seats. So that was cool.
That's so good.
Yeah. And I actually really enjoyed Paper Towns.
Okay.
Some people say it's a mystery in which there is no mystery and nothing happens, but I liked it as a theme piece.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's fair. I like that a lot. I haven't read or watched any of the movies. I do remember Charlie XCX doing the song Boom
yep.
Clap.
Yep.
And I have the biggest crush on Charlie XCX. Oh my gosh. I saw her once in person and I melted into a puddle. I died. She is my trifecta of big celebrity crushes. Her, Emily Haynes of Metric, and Courtney Barnett make me melt. I love them so much. But yeah, no, and that's how she got to kind of break out in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pumped. It was great. And she performed on Saturday Night Live for Boom Clap and Break the Rules. It was for her album Sucker. Awesome. Oh my gosh. Ah. Oh my gosh.
Love and enthusiasm.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Do you ever get celebrity crushes?
You know, it's weird. I kind of don't. I was like chilling with some friends the other day and they like basically did the old FMK celebrities, and I just could not think of any. I mean, like, they're all, like, attractive, obviously, but I could not think of, like, someone whose personality I was super drawn to, at least from their outward persona.
Oh, that's a good point. That's actually a really interesting thing to think about. That's a, like, especially, do you ever follow, like bands that much and kind of, like, how they, like, interviews or personas in general?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of being a Mountain Goats fan is, like, combing through the interviews and, reading the wiki for, like, all the different intros to songs that have been played at live performances. Closest second to that is, I guess, I follow a small Boston indie band called Tippling Rock. They blew up on Spotify a year or two ago. I am one of 16 people to own their t-shirt, and I know this because the order number was sequential, and it was 0000016. We're gonna blow up someday.
One day, and you're gonna be able to, well, if you want, so desired, you could sell that shirt off.
Right. Where was I going? Yeah, but yeah, no, other than that, I don't, necessarily know the personalities behind the music.
Okay, that's fair. It kind of also is kind of hard to judge it, given, like, it obviously what you're getting is an, especially the more popular you go, the more kind of groomed out it is.
Right.
It's, you're probably not talking, I actually am always genuinely curious about how close, especially with pop stars, how close, like, their real behavior is to, like, how they act.
And also, like, to what extent their artificial sort of shell inevitably gets absorbed into their personal lives.
Oh, possibly, too. I feel like that was kind of what happened to Katy Perry.
Hmm.
Oh, man. Have you ever really, like, deep-dived into that stuff?
No. I think I did see a Kesha deep dive. I think I saw a Kesha Netflix documentary.
Did you? I have not seen the documentary. I was around for, like, when she blew up through, like, TikTok and stuff.
Right.
And then I did see part of the MTV documentary.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I had a friend who was a lot more into her than I was, so I never really got deep into it. And I liked her her kind of comeback single, Praying.
Yeah.
That one. But I couldn't tell you, like, I don't think I ever became, like, a big Kesha fan.
Yeah.
She existed.
She existed.
She did. I think she kind of helped kick off the Me Too movement in a way of, like, her trying to levy those allegations against that producer.
Right.
Which I thought was really interesting. I always thought it was interesting that Sony did end up firing that producer. And so to me, I thought that was a, I mean, obviously, especially for those at home, this is not a legal opinion. This is pure conjecture. I do not know what happened. And I don't think anyone will really ever will, except for those involved. But I always thought that it was interesting that Sony didn't end up firing the guy. And I thought that they would have, if they thought the guy didn't do anything, they would have thought it was more worth it to just to keep this producer to the stars and drop Kesha than if he were innocent. But the fact he was, I thought it was a sign of guilt that he did end up getting shafted by Sony.
That seems reasonable, yeah.
Yeah, it could be for any other reason, but I did think it was interesting. And I thought a lot of people thought it was interesting, too. Maybe Sony was just trying to cover up its butt. Just trying to be like, look, I don't know exactly what happened either, but I would rather not a alleged creepy person being on the docket, which is fair, but also, like, it's kind of a matter of justice in which you want it to be served when it needs to be served.
Right.
The knee of justice. Have Captain Falcon run the music industry. Just F-Zero theme. Also, should we do another PSA? We're at 2:37.
May as well play it by the book.
I'm gonna announce one myself. Oh, I just opened up the applications. That's not good. Here we go. Ah, perfect. Some of these are always a little scary. I do mine on Rivendell a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one that was coded for bullying. And it was actually, what came out was one on sexual exploitation.
Oof, okay.
And I was like, oh.
A little harsh.
It's definitely a downer. It is an important issue, but it's definitely not, like, easy.
Yeah.
It's not an easy subject to bring up to your audience. But with that, we'll do BostonScienceLectures.com, public service message. If you're interested in science and engineering lectures in the Boston area, there's one great website to keep you up to date, and that's BostonScienceLectures.com. Each week, journalist and author Fred Hapgood monitors more than 420 different organizations in the Boston area to keep you informed about interesting scientific, engineering, and other nerdly events. Most of them cost nothing to attend, and some even give away free food as well as a part of the event. So check out BostonScienceLectures.com. This public message has been sponsored by your lecture-loving friends here at WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
You know, I'm actually bookmarking that page. That seems extremely useful, I'll admit that coming to college, I thought attending lectures would be way more of a thing, but it turns out it's a little like reading, where it's something you definitely should do for your own enrichment. But just don't.
I agree with you so much on that. Absolutely. I've done the same thing. The math department always does a, like, someone talks every Friday. I think I've been there once, and I think I was there halfway through, and then I had to, like, go home for something, so I was just like, see ya.
I did recently attend the Civil and Environmental Engineering Weekly Departmental Seminar, which is a mouthful.
Oh, that's a lot, yeah.
But the main reason was I saw a poster and I recognized the teacher who did my, like, Jumbo Days course, like, mm-hmm. the 45-minute model class, Eric Hines. He does a lot of work in the wind farm industry.
Okay.
So he was lecturing about stuff that went a little over my head. There was a sort of broad thematic thing of, like, what does it mean to be a civil engineer, but he brought in a lot of case studies involving structural terminology that I did not grasp.
Oh. See, I think that's the problem. I think that they try to aim in for also grad students.
Yeah, it was mostly grad students.
Yeah, that's what the math one does, too. Like, wait, let me bring up the last lecture they had, and I don't understand any of the title. Shields and Company. Here we go. Braids, polynomials, and Hilbert's 13th problem. Abstract. There are still completely open fundamental questions about polynomials in one variable. One example is Hilbert's 13th problem, a conjecture going back long before Hilbert. Who is Hilbert? No one knows. It's indeed. I like the use of indeed here. The invention of algebraic topology grew out of an effort to understand how roots of a polynomial depend on the coefficients. The goal of this talk is to explain part of the circle of ideas surrounding these questions. Along the way, we will encounter some beautiful classical objects. The space of monic, degree d square free polynomials. Okay. algebraic functions. I can handle that. Lines on cubic surfaces. I handle all that. Level structures on Jacobians.
Just throwing that in there, okay?
Boom! I actually I know what a Jacobian is.
I only recently learned what a level curve is. I don't know what a Jacobian is.
What calc are you in right now?
Three.
So you will learn what a Jacobian is.
Okay.
I think like it's in the latter half. Mm. I've kind of forgotten. braid groups, whatever that is, Galois groups, and configuration spaces, all intimately related to each other, all with mystery still to reveal.
Okay, so that's a lot, and part of what makes it a lot is I feel like they're making something very simple very complicated.
Yes. And I think what happens, too, is I think that commonly they assume their audience knows exactly what they're talking about constantly.
Right.
Like, they're just like, they just throw out Galois groups. And I'm like, what? Run that back?
Speaking of calc, shout outs to Caleb Magruder. He's a great teacher. He was talking about how Stephen Hawking did come to Tufts at some point in the past. And he added the little flair of drawing this on the board as he explained. He described it as like the difficulty curve of that conversation with Stephen Hawking was exponential. Like 90% of the talk, it was like perfectly clear layman's language, and then like the last 15 minutes he says like, let's put this all together, and within a minute, like, even the physics professors were just like, what is he talking about? I'm sure he's right, but what is this? I don't know.
Like, oh, man. Yeah. See, it always makes me wonder, though. Like, especially when everyone has lost you, what use does that information have anymore?
Yeah. I mean, you gotta get it out somehow, but not necessarily in a publicized talk. Like, keep that to journal articles and stuff where it can actually, like, persist in the academic record and be pored over.
Yeah, like, I guess what my problem is, like, see, I write for the publishing company I work for, and I've had to, you know, take concepts that are exceptionally more, like, relatively difficult and bring it to a level that most people can get to. And sometimes I just feel like if you get too esoteric in your language, to which only one or two people will be able to understand you, it becomes exceedingly less, like, sometimes I feel part of it is a problem with the writing rigor. Like, they don't take the time to make anyone understand.
Right.
Because they just say, well, I'm just happy that my group of people will be able to understand it, and that's fine with me.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that's necessarily a good mindset to have with academics.
Yeah. Last semester, I took a special topics course called Feminist Science Fictions.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the foundational texts in that class, and it's foundational in basically all of women's studies since like the 1980s, was Donna Haraway's Cyborg Manifesto.
Oh.
And I had to look that up. I went through this weird, like, multiple layered thing where I read the text, didn't understand most of it, read the Wikipedia article, couldn't really grasp most of that. So instead I turned to criticisms of the article in the hopes that they would, like, deconstruct the argument so that they could criticize it.
Yeah.
One of them that I came across was, basically, in the abstract, it was like Donna Haraway's article, Donna Haraway's Cyborg Manifesto was this foundational text in postmodern feminist philosophy. As a professor, I cannot advise assigning it to undergraduates as they will find it piercingly relevant, yet completely incomprehensible. Like, and that was the feeling. It was like, I know this means something, and yes, I think it's right, but I have no idea what it is.
See, yeah, like, it kind of, and at that point, like, is it saying anything?
Yeah.
Or does it feel, does it just create a feel space? And because you're on, like, a pedestal of, like, hey, look at me, I am expert.
Right.
I am correct. then people will be like, well, I don't know anything about it. Obviously, you must be correct.
Right.
But, So, did you end up being able to parse out the cyborg manifesto?
For the most part, yeah, there's still, like, one or two sections of the paper that I did not understand, mostly because they had to do with, like, critical theory and were drawing on some pre-existing, like, linguistic studies, but...
Yeah.
And granted, my professor would be disappointed in, like, my fuzzy retention of this topic, but the central thesis was, basically that, like, there are always going to be subdivisions and subdivisions of any group, and that creates power struggles even within oppressed groups, and so, since identity is, like, this very fuzzy thing that has a bunch of multi-dimensional subcomponents, that political activism should be organized around affinity rather than identity, around, like, common goals rather than necessarily common experiences. That's what I took away from the piece.
Okay. So... So it's a matter... is kind of like allyship versus, like, in a sexuality context.
Mm-hmm.
Creating social movements based on, like, you do have, like, that core of, like, actual LGBT people, but also wholeheartedly including and involving, say, what people refer to as, like, straight allies.
Right. I think, so that is an extension of that, but also I think part of how the analogy could be extended in this situation was, like, there are white gay men, and those arguably, like, have more of an elevated position within this subdivision of society than, like, trans women of color, and, like, situations like that, where if you get too focused on the fractures, it makes coalition building difficult.
I could see that. I can definitely understand where they're coming from.
Where, like, if you make it about, if you make it about the dynamics of oppression, there are always going to be subsets and subsets, so.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Like, yeah. You're just going, it honestly then just becomes, like, a ranking system.
Right.
And then, but honestly then, all that energy is just going to be taken up by arguing.
Exactly.
I think sometimes it gets sort of brusquely referred to on as the oppression Olympics.
Right.
Just trying to change doesn't really happen ever, because now you're just worrying about an arbitrary positioning that is more just who is in a worse heck than the other person.
Right.
Which is also based on an average.
Right.
Based on trying to take long-term trends, which may or may not be aligned with what your actual experience is.
Right. So, yeah, that was the most practical application of this thesis. It was, of course, built on a bunch of ideological things that went out in a bunch of different directions about, like, decentering Anthropos and what that, like, the boundaries between animals and humans got broken down when evolution was discovered. The boundaries between humans and machines were broken down in the one direction by, like, literal cyborgs, and by the other direction of, like, capitalism making machines of us all. And then, like, there's also... And so she says, like, one of the big movements will be, like, the breakdown between the boundary of life and non-life, and mm-hmm. the philosophy of vital matter, and that part confused me, and then that tied into, like, environmental activism. It was a whole thing.
Oh, that feels like a lot. I feel like that's definitely, like, an intersectionality party at this point.
Yeah.
It's like, throw in your social issue. We'll be there. Will be an application right. for you.
We will make a like monstrous cyborgian, and like monstrous is like a motif here of like Frankenstein's patchwork of like I don't know.
Oh man, yeah. I guess though the problem is like you would when did this come out?
I believe in the 1980s.
Yeah. So I think one of the things is, too, it makes me wonder about how much it would hold up with modern examples.
Right.
Like, if you take, like, movies like Her, do you remember that movie?
Yeah.
Or it's because that probably is, like, trying to create the most storybook romance of, like, just between him and his operating system, voiced by ScarJo.
Every time.
I appreciate her. She is so valid. Oh my god. Yeah. You got Scarred. You got Ex Machina, who's got. Well, actually, that one's really interesting because that does actually play into the monstrosity thing quite mm-hmm. well. But it is kind of more. This movie, have you seen it?
I've seen Her. I've not seen Ex Machina.
So, I haven't seen Her, but I have seen Ex Machina.
All right.
I will say this about Ex Machina. I think it's probably... The AI is definitely a villain.
Mm-hmm.
But, to be honest, I still did not feel... I felt actually more sympathetic to the villain because I felt that what they were doing was fair. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think... I think if AI... Like, I wouldn't be... If they decided just how people, like, I've always thought that if we discovered aliens, I think a lot of the common, like, a lot of the tensions between people will melt away as they'll become a common, there will be another other. I think that if AI decided to band together and have all of their sympathies go towards each other and prioritize protecting themselves over protecting human beings, I'd be like, you know what, fair. Fair, honestly fair. That it is your, like, is it moral? Maybe, maybe not. But is it fair? Yes. I think that is natural to kind of gravitate towards your own species or towards your own experience or, you know, something that's like you. Mm-hmm. And I think that, well, given what we have robots do now, and especially given, like, the steady rise of sex robots, I think, like, you know what? Yeah, fair. If they have, like, a robot uprising, I'd be like, okay.
As the, like, knife is being driven into my chest, like, I accept this. This is reasonable.
I don't think I'd accept this
yeah.
in the span of it. I would fight back, but I would not particularly blame them.
Yeah.
Then there'll be a human uprising.
Right.
I don't know. Do you think they'd have use for us?
I mean, I feel like if they're at the point when they can rise up, they've kind of done everything we can do.
You would think so. Like, what do you think that they would have, like, compassion in the sense that they don't want to just kill us or do you think they would just be like, you know what? It's our time now, and just go for it.
What is this beeping? But is that the stop sign? I think that's the stop sign. I got distracted.
That's fine. We can always, like, after we finish this thread, we'll probably leave this here. Also reminder that you've been listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio.
Yeah. So they definitely won't Matrix us because the batteries thing was kind of dumb.
Yes.
I don't think they'll keep us around for our artistic talent because I sincerely believe that can be mathematically modeled.
Interesting. Okay.
I'm just going to let that hot take sit. I'm not going to defend my position there, trust me. At which point it really does just become, like, can they feel guilt? Maybe. They might, like, keep us around as, like, a novelty. Or
put us in people zoos?
They put people zoos, exactly.
Oh, my God. Maybe. Or, like, do you think robots, like, once they achieve sentience, will also feel guilt? Is it possible, like, robots are capable of feeling guilt, but their action, like, acting, they won't act upon it?
I mean, God knows we don't, so...
That's fair. Like, we do find our ways to justify doing horrible things.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I think that there's still guilt, but there's still always, like, an element of, like, justification for whatever actions. Like,
yeah.
You know, we had to do it to him.
No.
Oh, my God. All right. I think that's a good...
And on that note.
And on that note, I think this is... It was almost 3 a.m., I don't know what you have to do tomorrow. I don't know what I have to do tomorrow, but I know it's a thing. So I think, what do you think? We can probably end this here. Invasion over. Invasion of the Station Snatchers.
There you go.
All right. Do you have any final words for us?
Not off the top of my head. I usually have an outro prep for my show.
Keeping you on the spot.
Yeah. It is a good and joyful thing. Nope.
No?
You gotta appreciate this dead air. This is part of the motif.
Is it really? I mean, I'm trying to, like, fill it as best I can.
All right, you know what we're doing? We are reading off my Twitter. We're just gonna...
You're reading off your Twitter.
My Twitter is art. Let's find a good most recent tweet.
Oh, my gosh. I did not think we would actually take this direction. But now that we are, I'm extremely proud.
Let us see.
Do you want to, like... plug your handle in?
At MD Roth on Twitter. Let's go. MDROTHE. Let's see. And you know what? I was happy with that bowl cut. Like the naked Adam.
That, yes, that's wonderfully surreal. I actually do appreciate that. Let's see, I actually never really have an outro. I only, like, I hope you guys have a wonderful weekend or wonderful week, or good luck on